CyberWorks is celebrating its next major milestone. As of July 2020, CyberWorks has had over 250,000 listeners. We're so grateful to all of you that have watched the videos on our YouTube page, commented on live release feeds, left ratings and reviews on your favorite podcast platform, redeemed bonus offers, or just listened in the comfort of your own home. Thank you to all of you. Because our listenership is growing so quickly and because CyberWorks has big plans for the second half of 2020 and beyond, we want to make sure that we're giving you what you want to hear. That's right, we want to hear specifically from you. So please go to www.infosecinstitute.com/survey. That's www and the numeral 2, www.infosecinstitute.com/survey. The survey is just a few questions and it won't take you that long, but it will really help us to know where you are in your cybersecurity career and what topics and types of information you enjoy hearing on this podcast. Again, that's www.infosecinstitute.com/survey. Please respond today and you could be entered to win a $100 Amazon gift card. That's www.infosecinstitute.com/survey. Thanks once again for listening, and now on with the show. Welcome to this week's episode of the CyberWorks with InfoSec podcast. Each week, I sit down with a different industry thought leader and we discuss the latest cybersecurity trends, how those trends are affecting the work of InfoSec professionals, while offering tips for those trying to break in or move up the ladder in the cybersecurity industry. Our guest today is Sam Rubin, VP at the Crypsis Group. Sam has a wide-ranging professional career incorporating incident response and digital forensics, among other things, and he's got some cool deep-in-the-trenches stories for us, as well as some advice for listeners who might want to get involved in digital forensics or incident response themselves, so I'm really looking forward to talking to him. Sam Rubin is the Vice President at the Crypsis Group, where he leads the firm's managed security services business, assists clients, and develops the firm's business expansion strategies. Sam is an industry-recognized cybersecurity professional with a wide-ranging expertise in data breach incident response, digital forensics, and cybersecurity risk management. Sam frequently serves as an expert witness and has provided opinions in numerous high-stake matters, including a landmark civil trade secret misappropriation case, a criminal securities fraud matter, and civil litigation stemming from a multi-billion-dollar Ponzi scheme. Sam is a frequent presenter, author, and lecturer on cyber-related topics, including digital forensics and incident response, insider threats, and information security best practices. Before joining Crypsis in 2017, Sam was at Strauss Friedberg, where he was the managing director and head of the company's West Region digital forensics practice. Sam, thank you so much for joining us today on CyberWorks.
Great to be here, Chris.
So we always like to get the show started by getting a bit of our guest's superhero origin story. So you've had quite a storied career. So what first got you interested in tech and specifically in cybersecurity?
Sure. So yeah, I've been in this industry for about 17 years now. So it's been quite a long time. Back in 2003, I was actually working in the Hill on the Hill for a U.S. senator, not in the cyber field, and I was working for an attorney. And she was recruited to open the Washington D.C. office of the place I was previously, Strauss Friedberg, which was then a very small organization, maybe about 20 people. And you know, I looked at that as an opportunity to jump into a new direction, to try something new. And Strauss Friedberg was a digital forensic investigative firm, and truthfully, I really didn't even know what that meant. But you know, being recently out of college, I thought that sounded really cool and like a great opportunity. And so I jumped on it, and you know, that was the very beginning of my path in cybersecurity.
Okay, could gave me some of the highlights here, but what were some of, like, from a learning or a project perspective, like what were some of the transformative or turning point events or opportunities that brought you to where you are now? Were there certain like cases that you did, or certain I wanted to learn this and suddenly everything changed for me? Can you sort of give me some of your signposts?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So when I started at Strauss, you know, back in 2003, you know, as I said, I did not know much about this industry. And so I looked at some of my colleagues and peers and the people who were successful in digital forensics. And I basically said, well, how can I do what they're doing? How can I improve my skills and my technical knowledge to, so I'm adding value to my company and helping clients out in the way they are. And so I looked at every job and every role I had as a learning opportunity. And the other thing I'll say is, you know, when you're at a growing company, that presents opportunities for the people who are in those organizations, and, you know, demonstrate the, you know, the initiative and the competencies to take on new challenges. And so, very early in my career, even though I didn't have the formal training and technical background, I was put in situations where, you know, a client needed help and we had to figure out how to solve their very technical problems, in digital forensics, in cybersecurity and incident response, maybe, you know, figuring out whether or not, you know, certain data was stolen or misappropriated or, how a hack had happened. And so those were the learning opportunities I had. And I, you know, progressed in my career kind of following that path.
Do you have any sort of strategies or, you know, it sounds like you had a lot of situations where it was like, figure this out immediately. We're, you know, we're beyond deadline or whatever. Like, how do you sort of keep your head in situations like that?
Yeah. I mean, the nature of digital forensics and incident response is such that everything is an emergency. I mean, you can kind of think about it almost as like you're a firefighter. Yeah. For situations, I mean, you could be enjoying your, you know, morning coffee, and you get a call, and it's a company's hair is on fire because they've just realized that, you know, they've got a threat actor live in their environment and they need help now. And so, maintaining your cool is a big part of it. And you know, my strategy for that is, I guess that comes with experience, and it comes with surrounding yourself with a really talented team that's also been in those situations and, you know, knows the right steps to take. And so that's what, you know, we try to do at my current company at Crypsis and what I've been fortunate to have in my career.
Yeah. We talked with an incident responder and he was saying like, you got to keep your head, you got to keep cool because like, it's not like they're going to get more hacked, you know, like, you know, the thing has happened. You have to like, you have to know that you're not going to help by running around in circles and freaking out.
Right. Yeah. It's tough because, you know, for our clients, this is, you know, likely the worst day of their year, right. Of their recent memory. And so, it's important for us to kind of keep that in mind as we're helping them, because even though we may see, you know, business email compromise or ransomware, you know, 5 days a week, this is the first and hopefully the only time they're having to deal with such a thing.
Sure. So one of the things that hooked me into your bio, and especially the one I just read out there, is that, you know, well, one, you work in digital forensics, which is a topic I don't get to discuss a lot on the show, and it's very interesting. But two, you've been part of several major and interesting court cases using your digital forensics background. So I wanted to start with some of that. For our listeners who aren't familiar, like, let's start out with what digital forensics does as a practice and as a career and how it differentiates, say, from like, you know, mobile forensics or computer forensics.
Yeah, I think that, well, just speaking from the beginning, digital forensics is really the application of investigative techniques and of science to study and interrogate digital media. And that's a broad category.
Right. Okay.
So it can mean everything from computers to mobile devices to, you know, SaaS applications. Really anywhere where, you know, people are using or interacting with digital information. And the reason you do that, and this is what makes it forensic, is that you're recreating either how it was used or what happened on it, or in some instances, what information it contained. For example, you know, recovery of deleted information. So that's what digital forensic is. It's most often done in the context of litigation. You know,
yes.
Obviously there's criminal investigations in the private sector for a company. Like in my career, more often it's in the context of civil litigation, a dispute between two companies. But there are many different paths and avenues that it can follow, which in my mind, what makes it very, very interesting, right? Like you can have cases that just vary night and day from one another, and it's all kind of under the specter of digital forensics.
So this is more of an umbrella term for all of the things that we sort of mentioned before. This is any sort of data or digital information and the sort of forensic examination and retrieval and reporting on it.
Yeah, that's right. So it would encompass mobile forensics and other things. Absolutely. Okay.
So from a sort of career standpoint, what types of things, you know, a lot of our listeners are just considering cybersecurity as a career and don't know what they want to start with. But like, what sort of things should you be learning or studying or getting involved with if you want to sort of prepare yourself to possibly move toward a career in digital forensics?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And there's no one right answer, which is maybe confusing, but also good for people who, you know, have taken one path or another and they want to get into this. At my current company, we hire from a very wide variety of backgrounds at Crypsis. You know, the traditional computer science, study of information systems, that's very helpful. And some universities now even have digital forensic undergrad curriculum. For example, Champlain College has a great program, University of Southern California here in Los Angeles, where I am, has a great program. And so that's one thing, but I think more critical, more important than just the kind of technical subject matter is that ability to think critically and to have those technical skills, but also to combine that with very strong communication skills, because you're engaging with clients who are having these problems. So, you know, it's one thing to be able to dive deep and do the technical, but it's another skill that needs to be combined with that to communicate and to correspond with the people that you're working with, whether it's attorneys or whether it's the victim of a cyber attack.
Can you give me some, you know, it doesn't have to be a specific example, but some sort of examples of the type of sort of problem solving skills you need to be using on a daily basis in terms, like you said, if all the data has been, you know, deleted at the last minute or because they know something's in there or whatever, like what are some of the problem solving skills you have to sort of bring to bear to say like, well, this thing's not here, but how do I get it here?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges that I see very often, it's very common with people earlier in their career, but even experienced practitioners, one of the hardest challenges is how do I wade through so much data, right? Yeah. Like even one hard drive, you know, you've got, maybe it's a terabyte hard drive. If you are looking at unallocated space or all of the event logs, you've got millions of entries and, you know, you could scroll through that data for, you know, days, just one drive. And investigations nowadays are, you know, commonly, you know, hundreds of hard drives, hundreds of endpoints, thousands even. Wow. And so what I see is that people really get overwhelmed even when they've got one drive. And how do I find the signal and the noise? And even when they're kind of educated on the different artifacts or places to look, they find what we see is like people will kind of like try and go through them serially and, again, just very quickly get overwhelmed. And so that's part of the really, a good skill to learn is like, how do you filter through all that stuff to answer the questions that you have?
Okay. So is that a sort of thing where you need to sort of get familiar with certain type of tools that can help you winnow, or are there just sort of like instinctual things that you say, oh, well, if there's that many thousands and thousands of potential, you know, inputs or whatever, like what do you do?
Yeah. So the answer comes to what's been helpful for me is starting with the end in mind and thinking about it. Okay. Like here's the question, the problem I'm trying to solve, like, and let's make up an example. So let's say that, our client is worried that somebody stole information from, you know, they were at a company, they left that company and they went and they, you know, they've now started a competing business and our client is worried that they stole information on their way out the door.
Okay.
So in that scenario, you can try and sift through every, you know, byte on a hard drive, or you can think like, okay, if they did that, how would they do that? Maybe they would plug in a USB drive. Okay, if they plugged in a USB drive, what artifacts would that create on the system? Mm-hmm. And then looking specifically for those artifacts, well, that would create something called, a link file. There'd be a link file and there'd be an entry in the registry hive that reflects connection of that drive. And so what it comes down to is basically having different hypotheses about things that would manifest themselves, and then looking for those and testing those theories one by one to assess whether or not something happened on a computer.
So that's good old fashioned deductive reasoning then, basically.
Yeah, that's an investigative skill, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But the challenge is to keep that focus in mind and not get bogged down.
Okay, so to move from very, very simple versions, you know, to sort of the advanced level, you teased out some interesting sounding stories in your bio, and you noted that you've, you know, quote, served as an expert witness and provided expert opinions in numerous high stake matters. We mentioned, you know, criminal securities fraud, Ponzi scheme. So could you tell me one or more of these stories and how you got involved in testifying with these cases?
Yeah, sure. So let's talk about the Ponzi scheme. So there's this guy, and you can Google him, right now if you'd like. His name is Scott Rothstein, and he was an attorney practicing in Southern Florida, and went down with this very notorious $1.2 billion Ponzi scheme.
Wow.
And essentially what he would do was he had a big plaintiff's class action or plaintiff's firm, and he would essentially say that he had clients that he didn't really have, and he would sell to various investors and private equity firms a piece of the settlement. Like he would promise kind of forthcoming, when my clients settle for multi-million dollars, you'll get that as a return on your investment, but they kind of want money now. So, you know, pay me and I'll pay you later.
Gotcha.
And so he did this on an ongoing basis as the way a Ponzi scheme works, escalating the number of matters and the size of the claims, snowballing up to $1.2 billion. And obviously, like all Ponzi schemes, it eventually collapses.
Mm-hmm.
And in the wake of it collapsing, there were a lot of injured parties financially. The hedge funds and the investors that lost millions of dollars. And there were obviously a criminal lawsuit against him, but there were a number of civil lawsuits as well. And one of those civil lawsuits was against his bank. Obviously used a large national bank. And the allegation was that his bank was complicit in his scheme and his fraud. And so the plaintiffs were saying, you knew what he was doing. You helped him. You were part of that.
Yes.
And so the defense, we were retained by this bank's law firm to help them defend against this allegation because, you know, they really didn't know, right? And they were duped just like everybody else. And so from an evidentiary standpoint, we needed to help look at the digital evidence and to uncover essentially forensically what Rothstein and his colleagues at his law firm were doing to perpetuate this scheme. And so we got through discovery in the litigation, we got our arms on the computers that he and his colleagues at his firm had used and their servers. And our goal was essentially recreate their fraud, like see what they were doing to help show the jury that in fact the bank was not complicit in it.
Interesting.
And so when we dug in, it was amazing what we found, just the extent of essentially fabricating wire transfer records. So it looked like he had money coming in that he didn't have, basically creating fake documents, creating fake email correspondence to create these fake plaintiffs that didn't exist. He went so far as to create a web server that he was running in a closet where he had had his IT people essentially scrape the real web page of the bank, and he created a fake website that would show his bank balance. So he would have investors come in and he would pull up the bank the fake bank webpage, and they would see, you know, all the money that he supposedly had in his bank account, but it was all fabricated. So it was a fascinating investigation that you know, really allowed us to dive deep into this $1.2 billion scheme.
That's amazing. Cause yeah, you're not just looking for data, but you're actually having to sort of recreate or fabricate like his entire sort of financial process and then help a jury understand what they're looking at, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So I guess I want to sort of talk about that a little bit. Is digital forensics something that intrinsically involves, you know, face forward testifying in court, or are there other jobs or tasks that can be done as well? So like, you know, you say you like to sort of get to the raw, you know, meat of figuring out how this stuff is, but you're, you know, a little, you know, maybe you have a little stage fright or something like that. Are there jobs that a digital forensics person can do that don't involve the sort of like face-to-face testimony or reportage or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, most of the matters don't ultimately go to court. And, you know, even those that do, there's always a team, right? Like if we're talking about this $1.2 billion Ponzi scheme, you know, we had, you know, dozens of forensic images and terabytes of data. And so I had a team working with me and at my direction. And, you know, there will, in the cases that do go to court, there will be one testifier, but, you know, there'll be a whole group of people who are supporting and, you know, who are vital to the success of the project.
Yeah. Contributing data and stuff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That don't ultimately testify. So that's actually how you learn too, right? Like when I started, I was working at the direction of somebody else who was testifying and learning. Mm. And following their guidance on how to conduct the investigation and what to look for. And ultimately they would testify and I would kind of learn from and emulate that. And I saw, again, to my point about adding value, I saw like, look, that's the thing that is kind of the, you know, the top of the pyramid, and I want to be there and kind of work my way up. But I certainly started out, being a contributor to the team.
Okay. Now, yeah. Did you feel by the time you were getting to these sort of high profile cases and you were leading them, did you feel like you, based on your past experiences, that you had the sort of tools that you needed, or is it always kind of like you're learning it new for the first time every time?
Well, I think that's one of the things that makes this job so interesting is that, you know, there's always new artifacts, new operating systems, new technology coming online. And so the whole state of the art in digital forensics is actually always playing catch up. So you could spend every day, you know, learning new tools, but if you're busy, you're always going to encounter a system that you haven't worked with before. And so that's part of the skill is being someone who's resourceful and can learn new aspects as they go.
Yeah. Now, walk me through like on a day-to-day level, like especially even entry versus executive level, what is the day-to-day work of a digital forensics expert? Like just give me sort of an entry level person. Are you just working on one case all the time, or do you sort of have your hand in multiple things, or are you, you know, do you start out as kind of like an intern who's like, just get me this data for this thing and this data for this thing?
Yeah, well, it certainly varies organization by organization. Okay. And, you know, a lot of digital forensics careers are certainly in law enforcement. You know, I want to make that, you know, somewhat obvious statement, I guess. Right. But I will speak, of course, to what my experience has been and what it is at my current firm, Crypsis. At Crypsis, we're doing a lot of the forensic work we're doing is also what you might call instant response. So it's DF. Digital forensics and incident response. And so our team of consultants, and we've got a great team of almost 100 people doing this work at any given time, they'll have a handful of matters that they're working on. You know, the number will vary depending on how big or small they are. I'd say probably 3 to 5 is average. And that what they're doing is helping basically solve the problem to investigate in that particular case. So to give you an example, to make this more concrete, let's say it's a business email compromise matter where an organization has had their email accounts hacked for purposes of some the threat actor, the bad guy perpetuating wire fraud, what we will have is a number of analysts on the matter who are digging into the logs of the email system and the computers of those accounts that have been infected to figure out how the threat actor got in, what did they access while they were in there, is there any evidence that they took or exfiltrated any information, and is the threat contained? And so that's what the team is working on an ongoing basis across, you know, many dozens or scores of matters.
Okay. So what are people who are hiring in digital forensics looking for in candidates? Like, what are some of the things you absolutely need to have on your resume, whether it's experiences or certifications or info about things you've done before? Like, how would a hiring manager look at that and say, this is the best candidate?
Right. So it depends on the level. And we at Ipsos, we certainly hire across multiple levels, all the way to, you know, people coming right out of college, to, you know, the more experienced folks. At the entry levels, it's really more about, you know, aptitude and, you know, demonstrated interest and passion in the field and the ability to problem solve and to learn information. We don't expect, you know, someone right out of the college, of course, to have, you know, years of case experience under the belt, or even for that matter, a lot of specific expertise using the tools or knowing artifacts that we leverage. We plan on and do teach people how to do that.
Right.
But what we can't really teach is the intrinsic kind of intellect and intellectual curiosity to solve these types of problems, and you know, some of the communication skills, both orally and in writing, that make someone a good consultant. So we're looking for people who can be great consultants. We're looking for people who can be problem solvers and have some demonstrated technical competency that we think can be transferable into learning this field. For the more experienced folks that we hire, I think discussions about what they've accomplished in the field, you know, some of these matter types that they've led, certainly there are certain certifications that are good markers for folks, the CISSP. There's an NCASE certification, NCASE being one of the commonly used tools. I think that's called the ENCE. There's a number of certifications that SANS offers as well that we look for. But in my opinion, the certifications, you know, while they're great, not, you know, they don't demonstrate with 100% certainty that someone has, you know, what we're looking for. It's really about, you know, what they can do with those certifications.
So jumping back to people who are kind of entry level and want to get in and have the passion and have the problem solving skill, but don't have a lot on their resume to show for it yet. Are there some ways that they can kind of pop their resume in that way to sort of like show you that they have that type of analytical brain, or, you know, like, cause you know, obviously, like you said, the actual, you know, sheepskin or whatever doesn't matter as much, but like, how do you look at an entry level resume and say, oh yeah, this person seems to be really passionate. Is it in the cover letter? Is it in the way they sort of like talk about their past experiences?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the way they present themselves when we're doing an interview, and then if that passion or kind of spark in their eye comes through for this type of work. But I'd say commonly, I mean, this is, you know, everybody's different, but what I've seen in a lot of great junior candidates is some sort of way that they've, you know, explored their interest in their in their academic career. And for example, a lot of universities have clubs where they have like a digital forensic or incident response club where they do like capture the flag exercises, they're doing some of the things out there. Or, you know, I interviewed a candidate not too long ago where I think he had built you know, a network at his house, and so they're just showing kind of like an interest in diving into this on their free time. Exactly.
Got some skin in the game. Okay. So, so to sort of jump from that, if you're maybe far from a large tech center, or you're not, you know, where you want to start doing this type of work, say you're in a different industry altogether, you know, are there ways to sort of get experience you need? You mentioned colleges and capture the flags and stuff, but are there, you know, if you're in another part of the country or you're not near, you know, a tech center, or you're, you know, caring for ailing parents or whatever, are there other ways that you can sort of document your to potential employers that you're, you know, that you're in this?
Yeah, I think, especially in the times of COVID right now, we're in an unprecedented environment of online learning being just such a, as good as it's ever been. And, you know, I mentioned Champlain College. I think they've got a great online program. And even those that, that aren't like fully accredited universities, I'm sure, I'm not up to speed on all, what all of them are, but, you know, there are certainly numerous online courses as short as an hour up to, you know, the full college type thing that someone could dive into. And, you know, in fact, there's one of my colleagues at Crypsis, you know, when we hire, he's been a colleague for a long time now, but when we hired him, he was making a career transition. He had been in IT and kind of worked his way up, but realized where his real passion was in digital forensics and incident response and cyber. And so on his own time, he took it on himself to enroll in some SANS courses and to just push his own knowledge in that direction. And so when we interviewed him, while he had no practical experience in DF or IR, he was coming to us like with this demonstrated passion and his own initiative to learn these things. And we gave him a shot, and, you know, he very quickly, you know, became one of the best assets we had. So
cool. So we've talked a lot about specifically about digital forensics today, but you also mentioned incident response, and you have, you know, data breach, you know, risk management background, insider threats and so forth. So for, you know, there's lots of people who are just getting on the ladder, and it might be hard enough just to sort of like figure out digital forensics for them. But do you have any sort of thoughts or advice for people who want to, who are sort of on that path a little bit and want to sort of diversify? Is I guess what I'm trying to say is things like incident response and risk management and so forth, are those significantly different where you're going to have to sort of learn different things, or do you sort of like pick up a little bit of all of them just by being sort of in this particular section of the industry?
Yeah, there's tremendous overlap, and depending on who you talk to, you might get a different answer about the definitions of each. Right. But I would say digital forensics and incident response are very intertwined. Sure. In my opinion, you can differentiate them a little bit because digital forensics is often more of a historical, like from a temporal perspective, it's might be going back a little bit further in time. And it's often focused on, you know, one or a smaller number of items of media, where IR, incident response, it can very often be, you know, something's happening now and it's my enterprise. And certainly forensics is more aligned with the litigation, where digital forensics is more about kind of an active threat actor. Right. But the tools are very similar. What you're looking at and interrogating on an endpoint can be very similar. So there's tremendous overlap, and they commonly are, you know, the acronym is DFIR all the time. When you get into cyber risk management, cybersecurity, there's more of the governance, risk, and compliance aspect of that, which is very different, in that you can get into, you know, is this organization have a robust information security program that aligns with the standards like NIST and ISO and the critical security controls? So that is a bit of a different branch. And at Crypsis, at my current firm, while they're all together in our professional services organization, we tend to have people that specialize a little bit more on proactive cyber risk mitigation versus the incident response and DFIR on the other hand.
Gotcha. Okay. So, you know, you have a lot of related areas of expertise. So I want to get your sort of crystal ball predictions on things. Where do you see things like breach mitigation and forensics investigation and risk management related fields going in the next 5 to 10 years? You know, I assume they're all going to be hugely growing. But do you see any sort of procedural or technical or tool-based changes that are coming down the pipeline that you're excited about?
Yes. You know, we think about that a lot here at Crypsis. Mm-hmm. Really always in the context of how can we better help and protect our customers and, you know, what's coming down the pike from a threat perspective. How is technology changing in a way that's going to change the way we deliver our services? And I think one thing that's interesting is if you look back in time, there was this kind of quote golden age of digital forensics where it really meant what digital forensics meant maybe 5-10 years ago was what we call now dead box forensics, which was essentially having a computer creating a forensic image, looking at that forensic image, and that was forensics.
Right.
Nowadays, it's really as you know, hard drive sizes explode, as IoT devices jump online, as enterprises are incidents implicate an entire enterprise and not one computer, and you've got to consider, you know, thousands of endpoints for one case that, you know, each one of them is 500 gigs. You can't do this dead box forensics. It just doesn't scale.
Sure.
And so what we think about nowadays is how can we do forensics at scale? Like how can we tackle and answer these questions when we have to consider, you know, 1,000, 5,000 computers kind of all simultaneously? And so we actually spend a lot of time thinking about what tool sets do we need to bring to bear to do that. And in addition to, you know, on the network, there's also obviously cloud infrastructure, right? Like, you know, whether it's AWS or Google Cloud or, you know, Azure, that plus, you know, SaaS applications like Office 365, these all are introducing different areas to investigate that are really just exploding, and the tools and the techniques need to stay, you know, they need to keep up with those different areas.
Okay. So yeah, as we wrap up today, you've talked a little bit about Crypsis Group, but tell me some of the projects that you currently have in the works that you're excited about.
Yeah. So, I mean, Crypsis, as a cybersecurity company, our mission every day is to help and protect companies. And we do that by investigating and stopping cyber threats. So, mm-hmm. We help, you know, over 2000 organizations globally. And we're really, really busy doing incident response, as I mentioned. So we're seeing every day companies getting hit by enterprise ransomware attacks that are crippling their organization. We're seeing business email compromise that's leading to, you know, millions of dollars of wire fraud that we're helping companies respond to. And so, you know, our team has its hands very busy helping organizations with these types of problems. You know, that keeps us busy and keeps our team focused. So that's what we're doing every day.
So one last crucial question here. If our listeners want to know more about Sam Rubin or Crypsis, where can they go online?
Yeah, sure. Our website, crypsisgroup.com, C-R-Y-P-S-I-S mm-hmm. group.com. Twitter, we have at Crypsis Group, and LinkedIn. I'm at LinkedIn/Sam Rubin, R-U-B-I-N.
Perfect. Sam, thank you again for joining us today on Cyborg. This was super fascinating.
Yeah, great. Thanks for your time, Chris.
And thank you all for listening and watching. If you enjoyed today's video, you can find many more of them on our YouTube page. Just go to youtube.com and type in Cyborg with InfoSec to check out our collection of tutorials, interviews, and past webinars. If you'd rather have us in your ears during your workday, all of our videos are also available as audio podcasts. Just search Cyborg with InfoSec in your podcast catcher of choice. And if you wouldn't mind, we would love a 5-star review and a review if you can spare the moment. For a free month of our InfoSec skills platform that we discussed at the start of today's show, just go to InfoSecInstitute.com/skills and sign up for an account. In the coupon line, type the word Cyborg, all one word, all small letters, no spaces, and you can claim a free month. Thank you once again to Sam Rubin and Crypsis Group, and thank you all for watching and listening. We will speak to you next week.